Have you ever felt like there's a bigger you that lives inside? Like you're more than one thing, but maybe you haven't given yourself permission to be your whole damn self. When we gather on Sexy Sunday, we're here to do that. I'm Bonnie, and I'm here for the taboo, the details of what makes you moan, and how we play with this experiment of life. Hello, loves. Welcome to the podcast today. I have another conversation for you as the second podcast in the series, Love After Divorce, where we talk about the love that we have had perhaps in a marriage, how that has expanded us, how we've expanded out of it, and how we have found love after that divorce and in other relationships, but ultimately how it's really about expanding what is love to you as an individual. And these conversations, these conversations are, I think, some of my favorite because they feel really honest and they feel really real and they're intimate and they're not always things that we talk about. And they're certainly not something that you look at a person and could guess the stories of where somebody has come from and what love means to all of us. And it's gets sexy and it gets philosophical and it's everything in between. And today we're going to talk with Marcus Stanback, who is a longtime contributor from the very beginning of this podcast and another episode after that. Like, I think it's almost every year that we're like coming back and, mm-hmm. and have a conversation here. And Marcus is somebody who I so deeply respect. He is sexy as fuck. He is living a life that he's stoked about, and he is expansive in all of the ways when you think about relationships and love and how the hell you want to like figure out what you're doing and how you're showing up and who you're showing up with. And it's going to be a treat to have this conversation, Marcus. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me again, Bonnie. I think this is time number three.
Yep.
It's like I'm a regular guest at this point.
Yes. Well, I'm going to also share with you, Marcus, because I believe, and people, I'll put it in the show notes where people can go back and listen to our other two conversations. But I believe at the end of our second conversation, which was like a year ago, that we shared about wearing butt plugs at our next conversation, just because it felt like a given that that was going to happen, that we were going to have another conversation. So I am currently.
You did. Wow. Wow. A year later for the callback. That, ladies and gentlemen, that's how you do a callback. If you were wondering how to do one, that's how you do one. A year later, remember the butt plug. That's how you do it.
There we go. I've got my butt plug in. I'm ready.
Wow. There's not many times in conversations I've been at a loss for words, but because we talked about that and then like it's a year later and I probably forgot and just whatever. And then you bring it up. I'm like, wait, what did she? Oh yeah. That was the end of our last conversation. Wow. Wow.
Well, I love too that we've been having
shout out to your consistency.
Consistency, yes. Well, and we've been having a conversation before we pressed record, and I'm like, this is absolutely how I'm going to begin this after we've been having a conversation for a bit. So here we are.
Like a long conversation too. Like we had a long conversation, and that's just you literally held that in the whole time.
It is held in. It is held in. Oh, I love you, Marcus.
Wow. Well, welcome to Sexy Sundays, I guess. That's my welcome to Sexy Sunday. That's how you know I haven't been here in a while.
Surprise.
And it's nice to be back.
Oh, so nice to be back. Time is weird, and I think even going into this conversation with you, I'm like, I think I just feel so grateful for the people that I know, and you being one of them, who are like, we really have known each other for so many years at this point in time. And we've known each other for more years, like across the country, than we have known each other for time in person. But the impact still that gives. And I just feel really grateful for that.
Yeah, it's definitely been an impactful relationship. I feel like when we were living close to each other, we just kind of were crossing paths and almost like barely grazing. And now it's like been like an ongoing relationship of like, oh, okay, like this is, I wish I would have known while I was still, you know, 20 minutes away. But, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. You know, you meet somebody. And it was the same with Jarrell, which is funny that you mentioned him earlier in our conversation, because, you know, sometimes you meet people as you're about to exit the space where y'all would be able to do the physical thing. But it kind of, it evolved into something where it was like, hey, like, we still were able to cultivate the relationship that we're probably supposed to have, where we do this on a regular basis. And, you know, I've been able to check in with you on some things as I wanted to do some new stuff. You've thrown some opportunities my way as things have come. So it's like, yeah, it's been what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And then we have conversations like this. So It's a win. Okay, let's jump into it. Will you tell me how long you have been divorced for?
Oh, damn. Now I have
math.
To think. 20. So technically it was finalized, I think, like towards the beginning of 2020, technically. So because I left Portland in 2019. So yeah, it wasn't finalized till 2020, the following year. So yeah, I've been divorced now for 4 years. Probably like right on, because I feel like it was about February of 2020. So yeah, I literally was officially divorced maybe a month before the world shut down. So, you know, karma and spirit always have really good jokes about timing for me. So it was like, hey, right now that you're a free man, right when you're ready to go back outside, feeling emotionally ready, we're going to shut the world down.
Yeah. Well, how long were you separated before the divorce was official?
Now, we were probably separated for officially separated, like not living together or anything of the sort, for I guess about 6 months at that point. But like the relationship had been over for closer to 9 months, I'd say. Like, I would say a year, but we were still trying, I think. But it had been a year since stuff had been looking like it was going in the right direction. Yeah. So it was a soft separation in that sense, just because it had been like a long stint of like, okay, it's going this direction. Neither of us are trying to be harmful to each other. It's just a matter of like, this is not working. It's not getting better. So I think we both kind of see this going in that. We'll try, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, and because I know a little bit about where you were with that. You don't have any kids, so that's like an important like point of this. Like, there's no kids to have to like navigate any relationship with now, because that does change the interaction with folks. Tell me about the experience of meeting your ex. Like, how did you meet your person?
So, we were actually high school sweethearts, to give you, like, the simple, direct, straightforward answers. Like, that's the person who in high school, and I was like, you know, you're young in high school, and as a guy, you're kind of like, oh, yeah, there's girls, they're pretty, great. And then there's one you eventually meet, and you're like, all right, but I think I, like her. And I met her early enough, like, maybe about to be in 10th grade, summer before 10th grade. And I met her just at a random party, school of girls that was near my all-boys school. And it was kind of like one of those things. I didn't see her all freshman year for whatever reason, stuff she came to. I just wasn't at. And I walked into that party and was like, yo, why haven't I seen her all year? She's like, okay, I like her. And then as I got to know her, she was the one who I probably became. She's probably the first girl I became friends with that I knew I liked. But we became friends first, just naturally. And I was like, oh, this is kind of nice. I like spending time around her before it's even gotten to the point of like trying to date or anything like that. And it was probably one of the most positive relationships I had from my experience. But being a young man, I was a terror at the time. And I didn't have a lot of guidance for like how to not be a terror. So I wasn't even doing it from a space of like not caring. I just didn't know any better. I was like literally 15-year-old young man growing up in Baltimore, kind of doesn't have the masculine figures around to be like, hey, this is how you operate when you're dealing with it. Like, nah, I didn't have that. So I was just figuring it out. And that was kind of, that's kind of part of the relationship that I won't say, I shouldn't say it haunted me, but it followed me. Because being a young person and doing harmful stuff that you don't know any better about does follow you in a relationship with somebody just because of how trauma works. So, you know, there was times where, you know, marrying somebody that was my high school sweetheart wasn't the best idea in retrospect, considering what I had to live through and figure out in high school. I was like, they were there with me figuring that out. And then, you know, thankfully they loved me enough to try it again later, but I wouldn't say that they necessarily had healed from that or were able to overlook or bypass that.
Yeah, sweet.
You know, there's some stuff.
Well, because when we're so young, I think as young people, there's, I mean, I think it's wild that you can be 18 and be called an adult, and you can be like 78 and called an adult. Like, those are such different adults.
Very much so.
And you're just like, we're babies.
Yeah. You're a baby adult. You're a baby adult. Like, you're technically old enough to barely take care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, and there's so much growing still to do. There's like so much learning space still to be in.
So at the ages where I was still actively learning as a teenager, I think, you know, the parts of the relationship from there that kind of established some of the problems we had later on, where that was probably the part of the relationship that I'd say, like, yeah, that was the most memorable part of our younger relationship. The fact that, like, hey, we met so early that I was immature and didn't really know how to, like, manage a relationship or manage someone's emotions in that way, or even manage how I delivered so that I wasn't, overly harming somebody unnecessarily. So that was, like, probably a staple to the beginning of our relationship. I was, like, you know, teenage boy and doing things that we all know teenage boys tend to do, especially when they don't have a lot of guidance. So,
I feel like there's so much gratitude to have for these people that we've been with, you know, and I was not married to my high school sweetheart. I always thought I would be, but that's not what I did. But I was also married young at 20, a couple weeks shy of 21. And I know, I just feel like I just have a lot of gratitude for those people that we were with. And I think just like having a moment of saying like, thank you to those people that grew up with us, that like there was no way around it. Like I think there's such a piece of my heart that feels grateful for my marriage to that person, because they helped shape me. Like there's lessons I could not have learned, or there's things that I, you know, we had to navigate together that have made me who I am and helped me think in the ways that I do. And some of those I'm like, oh, I could have done that shit better. Other ones I'm like, okay, they helped me figure out that, or I was there for them. And I just feel a lot of gratitude for, I think, the ways that that helped expand me and us and all of us, you know, if we've been in those relationships. And that doesn't mean it was all fantastic. That's not what I mean. But just we grew up. There was a point of growing up together.
Yeah. I absolutely feel like it was a growing up together. And like, you know, I haven't talked to her in some time, so I don't know how she would feel at this point. But I know that like, I'm like, well, you've literally seen like the worst through the best. And a lot of the best maybe came towards the end of the relationship where the romantic part was over. But it was like the willingness to still try and the willingness to still attempt to understand and even the willingness to like let go. Like that was one of the most loving things I think I ever did for her, was like being able to let go. And even understanding, like, when I felt like I wanted to let go, not letting it linger and be a thing where I'm like, I'm feeling this for time and time and time and time, and not saying, I was like, yeah, hold on. This is where I'm at. Mm-hmm. Like, as it was happening, I was sharing, this is where I'm at. Let's try this. This is where I'm at. Let's try this. This is where I'm at. I don't know if we can move forward from that. And it was like, that was probably, you know, given the whole story, I'm like, could it have been troubling at the time? Sure. But I'm also like, that was my point of growth. Like, that was where I was able to, like, because one of the things that became a ongoing habit of mine in the relationship would be, like, I wouldn't say what I needed to say or what I was feeling. And it was for some lack of confidence that it would be felt or understood in a way where I wouldn't hurt her feelings so bad that she couldn't hear me or feel me or see me. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, you know, that's a common thing that I think a lot of men experience that, where they're like, hey, I don't know if I'll be seen if I share how I'm really feeling. And I know I experienced it enough where by the time I finally shared and was seen, I was surprised at the response. Like, the response was a little bit like, oh, so you were open to hearing me. I just had to, like, put it out there.
Yeah. I think you're speaking to such a piece of fear for all of us to say, oh my gosh, I'm thinking this thing, but what happens if I share that thing and am I still going to be met? I mean, we all want to feel like we belong and we want our people to see us and we want to feel important and all of us, like every single one of us. And so I think this makes me think about hearing stories. I was listening to a friend recently who went to a bar and was sitting next to some random person and was on a work trip. And this person and her shared stories for like 3 hours and they didn't have any names. They didn't like talk about where they were from or what their names were. And they just shared their life and the things that they were struggling with, and how easy it is sometimes to just say the things to a stranger where we're like, they don't even know us. They won't have any sort of like judgment piece for us. But then like to come to the people that we really care about that we're like, and there's a piece of fear to say like, well, how do I say the thing? How do I communicate? And how do I hold space for both me and for them in that? And the what ifs of the sharing, that what might happen. It's like so real. And I think it's so real for all of us. So I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's a practice of vulnerability that I'm grateful for that part of the relationship. I'm grateful for that relationship teaching me what real vulnerability looks and feels like and how to cultivate it out of myself. And like also to like know the level of vulnerability I need from partners. Like it's been transformational since for me to see how I almost kind of demand a certain level of vulnerability with people who are getting past a certain threshold of relationship with me. Cause I'm like, hey, without this aspect, I'm not going to trust what it is you say we're trying to build here or whatever it is we're like engaging in, unless there can be an aspect of vulnerability. Like I need to know that, like, show me who you are. I'm pretty vulnerable with people that are kind of strangers at this point. And I'm like, yo, if I'm willing to do that, the minimum you can do is meet me halfway. I'm not saying you gotta meet me, like, you gotta be as vulnerable as I am. I know this is a thing I practice a lot, but like, show me that you're willing to attempt it for me to feel safe enough to say like, oh, this is somebody I want to explore a deeper relationship with. And then there are times where it saved me where I'm like, oh, they're actually not willing to be vulnerable. Hey, it's okay. I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm literally like, it's okay. We can be friends. No hard feelings, no bad blood. I'm actually good. We're going to stop it before it gets too far down a lane where it's like, hey, I was starting to feel like there was promises attached to that. And I'm like, see, nah, let's not. Cause I know that's a trap that a lot of men have fallen into for not saying that, like, hey, I don't know if this feels safe to me. Hey, not liking the behavior I'm seeing, even though it's early, it's like we'll kind of sit and put up with it and act like, it's fine. And then like not really have a standard for ourselves to say, all right, the sex is great, but I don't like this. And that's usually where it happens. I'm like, it's usually like once sex is involved, it's like, we just like turn this weird blind eye to the stuff that we know is like, hey, that's gonna be a problem for me one day. It's like, it's a problem today. We should probably say something today. And sometimes when you say something today, you'll find out that could be fixed easily. And then other times you'll be like, oh, this wasn't going to be fixed here. So I actually shouldn't continue to exist in this environment. Like, I shouldn't keep trying to build a relationship with somebody who doesn't want to build. There's a blockage right here. It's been really helpful. It's kept me out of some. It's kept me from getting deeper into some relationships that I needed to, in whatever capacity that wasn't gonna pan out into anything that I wanted.
Given your learning of what you do or don't want then, and kind of leaning into that, I don't know, I think the messiness, right? People think that it's too messy. People can't handle me because I like am emotional and I think these things. And what if I share this like the real self of me, right? And like, I don't know, I think we're afraid to be messy with each other. So you kind of saying, I need a certain level of people's messiness. Really, we could use that phrase. So like vulnerability, like honesty, truth, like what you're trying to figure out, who you think you are in the world or who you think you aren't, right? So you're like saying you want this, but given that conversation, and then there's a billion other conversations, can you give me like maybe two non-negotiables that you have? And this could be anywhere from, this communication piece. It could be something sex related. It could be something like, like there's like the whole range, like anything of like non-negotiables for the way that you want to be met in relationship that you have discovered through this process of marriage, divorce, exploration of self and with others.
So I was at a men's event, a seminar for men this past weekend that I was guiding a meditation for, and I participated and sat through a lot of the seminar as well. And one of the things that came up, it was a needs assessment that one of the brothers was guiding, and he said he did it for boys a lot of times. And I found that really interesting because there was a lot of stuff on that needs assessment that I was like, I think back to when I was a boy. Plenty of this stuff I definitely could have used and would have checked off. But even as a man, I'm like, there's some of this stuff that, like, wow, I very much recognize that there was a time that I needed it, but I've advocated for it now and like get it in a lot of my relationship. And I'm like, one of the first things that jumped off the page for me, Bonnie, was space and time to myself at home. And there was something about the full phrase that did it for me, because it was like, I can get space and time to myself, like if I leave the house or if I'm in the car and I'm driving or if I'm on my way to my class or if I'm at the gym with my headphones. It's like, yeah, sure, whatever. But there's something about space and time to myself at home. And to myself doesn't need to mean like you're not in the room all the time necessarily. Like, not in the room is great. That's like, sometimes that's the ideal, because then there's no temptation for the distraction. But I mean, like, literally that time where it's like, even if it's just the first hour of the day, like, nobody's talking to me. Nobody's asking me for anything. I have space and time to, like, do whatever it is I want to do. And it's like, I'm better at doing a million things at one time, or what it seems like I'm doing for all these different people, when I have just that little bit of time to myself in my safe space. So that's one of the things that's like a non-negotiable. Somebody who sees, knows, understands, and respects the fact that that space and time is like where I gain a lot of my capacity to do what I do for others. And another non-negotiable. It's funny because I don't really have any sexual non-negotiables, and I never really have. And I don't think I've ever had any. For some reason, I've just been blessed in my life to not have any boring sexual partners for real. Like, not really. Not like really, seriously. Like, not really. None of my long-term relationships have been with like boring sexual partners. So I've never been in my head where I'm like, you know what? Non-negotiable here. It's absolutely has. And there's times that I was in a marriage where, like, yeah, we talked about this, I think, on our last podcast. I was in a marriage where there's definitely stuff I like and enjoy that I definitely was not getting, and I still didn't make it like some non-negotiable where I'm like, you know what, every woman I date from now on has to, nope, I was just like, you know what? The women that love me for real, I won't have to ask for this. Mm. Like the stuff that I want is so simple and like, and more like about the essence and energy behind it that I'm like, I won't have to ask for that if somebody really cares about me and really wants to pleasure me and really wants to like see me enjoy my, like, I won't have to ask for that.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm not, it's not even, my imagination isn't even that great sexually for stuff like that. I'm like, I'm more like clever for like stuff that's gonna be fun and pleasurable. It's like, I don't have this grand imagination. So I'm like, nah, there aren't many other non-negotiables. Those are the biggest two, truly, like respecting my space and time to myself and the transparency factor. Like, and I work a lot on transparent communication to be like, when I'm talking to someone, I'm transparent with what I'm saying, but like, yeah. I'm working more on like my intimate romantic partners, like digging in and being like, oh yeah, I need to share all of these things with you though. Like, yes, there's a list of stuff that's happened that I need to share the whole list with you, because some of it affects you. And even for the stuff that doesn't, it affects me in a way that could affect you. Like, you need to be aware of where I'm at. So I'm working on that actively right now, because that's like another level of transparency that I'm desiring. Like, I'm desiring people to be able to be like, hey, let me know what's going on with you. Especially like currently, one of my partners is pregnant. So I very much have a need for more transparent communication around like, hey, how are you feeling today? I know you said that earlier, so, but how are you feeling now? And hey, okay, do you need anything right now? Okay, I know I just asked 2 hours ago, but do you need anything now? So, and I'm learning like, okay, that's another, and she wants that same reciprocation of me where she's like, hey, how are you feeling? Like, you just went and did a whole thing. You were a part of a 4 hour long, you know, seminar. How was that? You led a meditation for like a large group of men. How was that? Oh, you had a new class today. How was that? And I'm like, oh, this is like, it's beautiful, but it's also like she's desiring me to come forth and be more like, oh, so hey, I went and did this today. That felt like that. I've been thinking about this. And like, even with just organizing stuff for us as a family, it's like, she's like, okay, so I know you got this thing, this plan, but what about? And I'm like, oh yeah, I have to like, it's basically planning for 3 people at all times now. And that is easier when there's transparent communication on both sides, like demanded of me and asked of her.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, it is the team, like it's a team effort. And I think it's beautiful, I think, to hear you talk about, you know, we're kind of like jumping from past relationship and there's more story with like that ending of relationship. And then, you know, in the last podcast we talked about, there was the toe sucking. I just remember there you had some toe sucking experience, and you were talking about being pleasured in new sorts of ways. And so there's all of those things. And then to now being like, yo, I'm with this person.
One of the experiences I told you about, and it wasn't the toe sucking, it was the like foot job energy like that. Well, that's who I got pregnant. So if y'all ever trying to find a new way to get a guy to pick you, whew. Especially for us yogi men, the feet, wow. Just wow. Wow. But I mean,
so legitimately. By a foot job, you're meaning, what thing are you meaning by a foot job?
Like using her feet to manipulate my sexual organ. That was like, okay, organs, like she was in the whole area, just in the erogenous zone with the feet. Was like, huh.
You're like, well, now you're gonna get pregnant.
I mean, basically. Is that what happened? Yeah, that's kind of what happened. It was like, well, you show me something there, but I guess I'll show you something new now. Like, whoa. But yeah, like really, like that, and that's what I mean when I say like, you, the partners that I end up being aligned with deeply, like it's probably as aligned as you can get with somebody to have a child with them. And I'm like, but it's been pleasurable, it's been explorative, it's been fun, it hasn't been boring at all. Boring is the last word I use.
Yeah. Yeah. I am like, I knew none of this, like going into this conversation. So this feels like extra exciting too. And having had kiddos myself, and I think, I don't know, it's different going into having kids later and after other relationships and your awareness of yourself. I don't know. I'm stoked for you. I'm stoked for you. I'm stoked for your partner in this. And yeah, that makes me really excited. So let's lean in there. Like, what, like, tell me about, because her body is changing as she is pregnant. Tell me what you love.
Cool. Like the sexy Sunday version, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll put, and I'll say this, cause I'm like, I guess not many men get the opportunity to share what we enjoy or experience of like sexual desire of our partners during pregnancy. She's never been more beautiful to me. Mm. Like, wow. Like sometimes I'm like, right now she's in Africa. And so we're on like FaceTime or WhatsApp, FaceTime calls or whatever. And I'll just, she'll just get on the phone. And I'll just like, wow. Like, it's like, and then there's also the times where it's like, you just wake up or you, like when I show up and it's like, she, her belly's bigger or whatever. And I'm just like, it's incredible that you can be this attractive to me and this arousing and also be growing an entire human inside your body right now.
Mm.
It's like the coolest, most attractive thing I've ever probably watched a woman do. And that's just like one of those things where I'm like, it's my first time. So I'm sure, you know, this probably won't be my only child, but I'm like, I'm sure hopefully I'll get to experience this amazing miracle again. But I'm like, it's actually one of the joys of like being a man.
Oof.
Like, honestly, and not in this, like, I think sometimes it gets said too often where it's like, oh yeah, we don't have to deal with the pain. No. The joy of being a man is not that you don't deal with the pain of the childbirth and all. It's the beauty of you get to watch from the outside looking in and watch a human get grown inside of a human that you hopefully love and appreciate and care for. So like, you literally get to like, now I get why they say men are providers. Cause like, you can't tell me not to provide for them. It's like, it's, you don't have to tell me to do it. You can't tell me not to. You couldn't stop me from doing it if you tried. Like, you just couldn't. It wouldn't be possible. There's too much inherent natural dedication to like creating space for them.
Mm.
And that's what I'm really enjoying, because creating space for them looks like, to me sometimes, creating space for her, sexy Sunday poetry, sexy Sunday podcast version, creating space for her sometimes makes sure, is like making sure like she knows like, yo, you sexy as fuck right now. Like, I will literally, I know you need the pregnancy pillow so you can lay on your side, lift that leg up. I'm gonna get to it. Like, yep, I'm just going right here, belly and all, slide the pillow under the belly, and I am here with it. Oh, you want to switch side? Cool. Like, yep. Anything I can come, anything you want to do, anything I can come up with, we'll make it creative and get. And I'm really like, that space is just to make sure that she knows, like, yo, this is not in any way having me feel like you're less attractive. I'm like, goodness gracious, quite the opposite. And I knew I wouldn't have. I've always found like pregnancy to be powerful. So I knew I wasn't going to be like, oh, this is weird or what. No. I had a homie say like, I don't know, man, you might not be wanting to like, you're not, the sex is going to be different when that's like the mother of your child. And I was like, you mean like more passionate different? Like, what? Are you serious, bro? Like, are you kidding me? And as I'm experiencing, I'm like, hey dog, you might need to come holler at me for like some yoga sessions to get in love with yourself and get more in touch with the love that you have for yourself. Cause I'm like, there is nothing about this that has made me standoffish around our sexual chemistry. It's like, I just be wanting to like love and hug and kiss on her as much as I possibly can. And also knowing that that's an expression of love that our child is feeling, like our child is being held in the warmth of that love that we share. So I'm like, yo, it's easier to make the time and space and have the energy for it. Cause I'm like, yo, I'm on double duty right now. And that's enjoyable to be like, yo, both of y'all get to feel this.
Ugh. Hot damn. Hot damn. Oh, I love that. I love all this so much. I'm so stoked for you. And I love hearing this too. I think the last time I was pregnant was now like almost 13 years ago, which was a second. but I think to have the sort of affirmation and attention like your giving is so powerful, because being pregnant is wild. Like that something grows inside of you is wild. It's so weird and powerful and all of the things. So yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. And even in what you just said though, in the share about, you know, one of the dudes in your orbit who was like, wait, are you sure you're going to want to, like, you're going to want to be with this? You're going to want to do this? Like,
no, he's had two kids too. So he was like, kind of like, hey man, you know, you look at it a little differently. And I was like, I do look at it differently, but not, I don't think in the same way. That's actually one of the places I think the yoga practice has helped me a ton.
Ooh, say more.
Because the yoga practice, the practice of being present with like how I really feel about stuff kept me from getting stuck in the awkward feeling of like, oh, her body is changing and like it's more delicate. And now I'm thinking differently about like our sexual relationship. I was. And then because I had a presence with myself and with my thoughts through that whole process, I didn't get stuck on the obvious thought of like, my body's weird, so now I'm stuck in this weird. I actually landed a little bit deeper on the idea of like, her body's changing. And it's not in that normal, like, what if she's still got Instagram on her phone, she still goes out in public. It's not in the normal cast of beauty that society throws out there. So I was like, if there's ever been a time that she needs the reassurance of my arousal by her and her attraction to her, especially her physical body and what it's doing for our family right now, I'm like, it'll be now. Like, I can't imagine a time that she needs to be physically loved no more. Like, it's kind of ridiculous to me when people are like, I don't know, sex during pregnancy. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, when do you think a woman needs to feel more pleasure than when her body literally does weird shit every day, changes all the time, everything from swollen ankles and feet to nosebleeds and headaches and belly aches and the diarrhea and the random shit that y'all just deal with at all different times of pregnancy. I'm like, and you mean nobody's gonna eat that pussy? Are you kidding? You want her to deal with all that and she's not gonna come? Are you kidding? What about when her hands can't reach her clit because the belly's in the way? Are you serious? You're going to make her figure that shit out? Are y'all joking right now?
Fuck.
It doesn't even sound right when you say it out loud. Like, when you say it out loud, it's like, where's the belly growing? It is literally in the way of a woman in her pleasure spaces. What's the easiest setup and support for her if she's needing some pleasure? For somebody else to do it. Somebody else should be doing it.
Yeah. Oof.
Hypothetically and ideally, the man who decided he thought it was fun to go and have sex with her. I was actually talking to some young brothers about this last night. I was like, yo, we actually should not be having sex with women who we aren't willing to at least have a family with. Like, if you wouldn't bring her in your mama's house and have her sit at the table and eat and leave them for an hour to have a conversation and come back and feel like it would be okay, you probably don't want to sleep with her. You probably just want to be friends, or y'all want to collaborate on something, or you want to help her or something. She wants to help you. You don't need to sleep with her, though. Because whatever your reason is for not wanting to leave her around your mom, or leave, and I shouldn't say always your mom, but it's like leave her around a loved one that you care about that is vulnerable. If you wouldn't leave them around a loved one that you care about that's vulnerable, why do you think that you should make yourself vulnerable to them?
Yeah. Okay, wait. Let's lead into that, because I feel like, this would have been 2 years ago. I think this is when I started, when I split Sexy Sunday off Yoga Strong. And that was like hoe phase conversation. You're like, this is my hoe season. Right. This is summertime. We talked about how young you were when you started having sex and being really upfront. Like, I think that's like one of your things that you're really consistent at, is you're like, this is where I'm at. This is what I'm looking for. This is who I'm looking for it with. And so I love that you're like having this conversation maybe with the like younger dudes and being like, hey, are you going to like bring them home to your mama? Because like, if not, maybe you shouldn't hit that. Right. And then at the same time, like you were like, it's hoe season. I'm going to be with you tonight. I'm going to be with you tomorrow night. I love that all of this like lives in you, because we are more than one thing.
It does.
And we get to change and we get to adjust in what we want in our life.
And I'll clarify too, because I'm like, I'm not always meaning like, this is the person. I'm not one of those guys who's like, hey, if that's not your person that you're bringing home and you want them to be the forever person, you shouldn't be sleeping with them. That is not what I'm saying. You absolutely should sleep with somebody who's not your forever person first, because you want to figure out at least what you're doing.
What you like.
Yeah, what you like, what yeah. you don't. But like, when I say forever person, sometimes I think we think of that too romantically. And I think we think of the whole option set for relationships way too romantically, where it's like, yo, would you be proud of the person that they are in front of your loved ones?
Mm.
Because like, that's the question we're really asking, right? Because it's like, if you'd be proud of the person that they are in front of your loved ones, you could have met them yesterday. If you've sensed their character enough and they're like, yo, yes, I've seen them and interacted with them in multiple different ways, and I've sensed the depth of their character, I've seen how they interact with their family and loved ones, and absolutely, I'd be proud to say that this is someone I have a relationship with in front of my loved ones. That's when it's like, all right, maybe we can go into that next step where we talk about taking our clothes off and sleeping with each other. But like, I'm just, I think too many of us, men, I'll be specific, women do it too, but men do it more. Just the nature of masculine and feminine. Men can be super logical, and for that, when it translates to sex, it means we're very visual. And because we're very visual, sometimes we choose our sexual partners too visually and too logically, and we don't stop to like actually have a sense of if we feel safe, if we trust this person, if we feel like they're an honorable person to be united with in this way. So we're just going on like, oh, look, they check the boxes. She's not like a homeless, random, dangerous person. And my physical body likes what we see.
Mm-hmm.
There's no check-in with like, how do we feel around her? Did we like the experience and enjoy the experience of meeting her? Did it seem like she enjoyed the experience of meeting us? Or does she just want something from us? Do we feel like there's something of value there for us? Or do we just want to take something that we think is available? Is there actually something there to work with and build with, like that we're like intrigued and learning more about? Or are we literally just saying, ooh, look, a toy to play with?
Mm.
Because a lot of times it's like men treat women like we're at Toys R Us, and we just go in there and we're like, what can we afford? And that's how we choose. It has nothing to do with what our desires are, what we enjoy, what's going to make us actually want to play with the toy all day and wake up the next day and play with it again and wake up the next day and play with it again, right? I'm coming from a real analogy of a little boy that used to go to Toys R Us almost every Saturday. I did not have a mom who was abundant in funds. So when I had to choose my toys, I had to choose some shit that I was like, I'm going to be all right with this for at least 3 to 6 months before I even think about wanting another toy. So over time, that groomed me to say, like, I want to choose to be in relationships with women that I want to see around long term, time and time and time. Like the post you said, you mentioned when we first got on here, right? I am building communities with people that I want to see over and over and over again. I do not like sleeping around. It's actually too much work. It's too much work. It's too much energy. It's too much time. It's too much explanation. It's too much interaction. It's just too much. I do, however, like having pleasurable relationships with people. And usually those come from picking people that I'm super proud to be in a relationship with, that I'm feeling honored in that relationship with, that I'm very much invested in saying like, yo, this is like, yo, I'm proud to have even been able to attract them.
Yeah, I really appreciate this conversation. And I think, I mean, you and I have such a different sexual past, but I think about, yes, it is a lot of work to have a lot of different partners and to be like, okay, who am I going with, where, and the conversations that that requires. Like, there is an, if you're going to do it consciously, if you're going to do it with care, let's like put a little that. If you can be like, okay, let's have some STI and pregnancy conversations and like do the shit like an adult and lean into those conversations like that are actually like real real life, and because if you can't talk about it, like that's a problem. So if you're going to do all that, there is a certain amount of work in that, and that they're thinking about myself and knowing that you also had an open relationship at a point in time with the person you were married with. I think for me, there was such a piece of learning in, especially that year and a half that I was in an open relationship before my divorce, that I had only been with one person. And as you're talking, I'm thinking of people where I was like, well, that person, like, I mean, I know you're speaking to men, but as like a woman and as somebody who also was in an exploration space of like, what do I like and who do I like? And like there is spaces in our lives when we're gonna like, and not everybody, of course, that's dumb to think it's going to be everybody, but like there's going to be a space in a lot of our lives where we're just going to throw it out there and we're going to be like, okay, cool. Like what's this and what's that? And where we're going to get to the point where we're saying, oh, this is too much work in this place. This is actually what I want. But I think that there maybe is an acknowledgement piece here of, could you have even gotten to this point had you not done the other, where you're like, oh my gosh, actually that's like so much work.
No way. Like, okay, so this and my hoe phase are not that different. The difference of this and my hoe phase primarily is like my standard for who I'll engage with. Like in my hoe phase, my standard for engagement was like, don't be dangerous to me. And have some sense of like self-awareness and care for yourself where it's like, all right, you're not dangerous to me, you're not dangerous to yourself, and this is not going to be some completely frivolous relationship.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I wasn't saying like, hey, you got to really be wanting to build community, you got to be ready to do that. I didn't have other parameters around what I desired and what was necessary because I truly wasn't ready to build it myself. So the whole phase was more an expression of like, hey, I'm not at the point where I'm about to like build right now. So if you want to have fun, I'm still a pleasurable being. Still enjoy that. I'm not in a building phase right now. I'm literally having fun.
Yeah.
And through that fun though, I was like able to explore new things that I do like. And then even found people that I'm like, oh, like I'm kind of in this whole phase. I told them where I was at. They know where I'm at and we're exploring. They are also exploring and they're not trying to put me in some box just because they like this. I was like, that's a great sign for me to start to lean into building a more long-term community family style relationship. Why? Because they're not automatically just assuming because they like this that they want to own it or control it. They are literally honoring what it is that they like. Like I came to them like this and they're like, ooh, I like this. So yeah, keep doing that. And we've shifted and gradually like transformed naturally from like, oh, we're experiencing this together. Do we want more of that? Do you want more of that? Yeah, I do. Oh, you do too. Okay, so we can shift together.
Yeah.
Like we can shift together. I shifted out of my whole phase into basically something that was exploring a relationship, into something else that was like exploring a poly relationship that has now blossomed into like, yeah, that's where we're at now. Like, and it hasn't been a thing that was like, I don't think it would have been possible without me truly embracing the fact that like when I wasn't ready to do the family thing, I didn't try.
Mm-hmm.
And it brought me to a community where I was like, oh, I think I want to do the family thing.
Yeah.
Like I was genuinely already thinking about it. And so when this happened, there was no like, oh shit. There was more of like a, already? Really? Cool.
Yeah. Oof. Okay. Tell me more. So you're saying that you are... Do you identify then as like practicing polyamory at the current moment?
Yeah. Like for the explanation of how people are defining relationships right now, yes.
Okay.
It is definitely a multi-partnership.
Yeah.
And it's a multi-partnership that is like, you know, there's three. Yeah. There are three separate relationships that are all a part of one larger relationship. Like, so it's not just like, hey, I have this relationship and I have that relationship and these are the two relationships. Like, no. They have a relationship too. My two partners absolutely have a relationship with each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things that I think allows us to genuinely work.
Yeah. And
it's one of the parts that I'm like, especially with one of them being pregnant, it's kind of essential. essential.
So when you say three, do you mean that there's three different people and everybody has a different relationship with each other?
Yeah.
So like in the triad sort of form where like everybody is overlapping.
Everybody is overlapping.
Okay. Okay.
So like I have a relationship with both of them. They have a relationship with each other.
Yeah.
They each have their own relationship with me. And, but we all like commune together and have a united relationship. Like it's like a, and I say, I make it, I'm specific about it in that way because it's like one of the things I think that gets shown a lot in polyamory right now is like, oh, there's this guy who's playing as the center of the relationship and has two relationships, one with this woman, one with that woman. And I'm like, it started off like that because we were the ones having the initial relationships. But like, as soon as they entered that space, I was like, hey, like, this is who else is in this space. How do you feel about them? And they were like, oh, actually, I'm really interested in her too. And likewise. So it was like, okay, because that's like what I would want. I wouldn't want it to be like, I don't think I could maintain two separate relationships and a child on the way and run yoga businesses and build a mentorship. Like, that would be crazy.
Mm.
But what I can do is be in a mutually supportive relationship with two other people.
Wow.
That is not as crazy. Like, for example, like, I did the nap retreat for the week after or 4 or 5 days after the nap retreat. My pregnant partner went to Ohio with our other partner for a few days. And it literally gave me time and space to have, like, literal physical space to, like, just run around and do some things that where I didn't have to be as present and hands-on for care for her. But also mentally, I was able to release. She wasn't just out of my care or out of... You know, she wasn't just out in the world or sitting at home. She was like, yo, within a realm of care with somebody else who I trust wholeheartedly, knew she, to the point I'm checking in on them and they're getting annoyed with me like, oh, we're fine. And I'm like, oh, all right, I guess I'll leave y'all alone then. Damn.
Damn, Marcus, I love hearing this. I think it's so interesting. It's so beautiful. It's so expansive. And I think that's what I'm hoping for in these conversations, right? What is love after divorce? And truly, if we have come from a small place, a place of like, okay, this is what marriage is and this is what love is. And then we're like, wait a second, now we're getting divorced. And now we have to like figure out our shit and say like, who am I? And what is relationship? And what is love? And to define that for ourselves and to find people that are open to being in those conversations to define it alongside us is like, could we ask for anything more? Like, truly.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Really couldn't.
Yeah.
Really couldn't.
So because you are in this space, did you ever, well, actually I want to scoot back. I'm going to go back to when you were married and you opened your relationship then. Was that the first time when you experienced kind of, having more than one sexual/romantic relationship at a time?
No, it was just the first time I did it like consciously and with a full on sense of care. Like I wasn't careless when I was younger, but I definitely did not have a holistic sense of care where I'm like, hey, you should know everything you're walking into before you decide to walk into it. Like there was a time where like, and it was rare back in the day, but like even in college times where like if a woman decided to sleep with me and then we'd be like, so am I the only girl you're sleeping with? And I'd be like, no. And they would be like, what? You just said that so casually. And I'm like, well, you asked me and I'm not going to like create some large random story. Like even like I'm trying to make it seem like that's the case. The answer is no. Is like, if you want to know more, ask me more questions.
Yeah.
But like, I've gotten to a point now where it's like, yo, if I see somebody who's like wanting to engage in me in that way, and even before I was partnered, it would be like, I would make it clear who they're dealing with. Where I'm like, and I'm like, even down to like, most people I don't meet people with them one time and they just engage right there. I'm not that type of person. My energy's too like, it's a lot. You're gonna meet me the first time and it's like, oh, he was cool and we engaged and da da da. But it'll be like the second or third time we catch each other where it's like, could I? And by then you've seen me. You see how I move. A lot of the women that come to Camp Connect always have like little jokes or things to say because they'll be like, yo, the women at Camp Connect love you. And I'm like, I take care of them. And I'm like, and most of the ones that y'all are looking at me thinking like, that's who it is. I'm like, have never, like, I haven't seen them naked unless it was a workshop. And then there's the few that people be like, but y'all two are seem real close. And I'm like, well, you got a good eye. And that's what, but it's just that. It's like, it's literally a matter of like, I've always been present in multiple women's lives. And I've always had multiple women present in my life as friends, as more than friends, as romantic partners. And I've always been pretty honest about it. Now I'm just transparent about it, where it's like, even as these relationships are building, like one of the first things that happened when my second partner, or the partner I met second in, or began to develop with second, as soon as it started to develop into a space where it started to feel romantic, I let the person that I was already exploring with know, like, hey, we are, like, something's changing there. And I feel it changing, and it's probably going into this direction. And that's when she was like, oh, well, I like her, so okay. And I was like, oh, look at me, like, benefiting from being very upfront. And even that other relationship, like, I thought I was more outright with it than I was, but, like, I didn't hide what I was doing the next time we were all in the space together. And she came to me and actually had something to say, like, yo, that kind of took me off, caught me off guard. Like, that was a spicy, fiery interaction y'all were having, and I didn't realize it was, like that romantic, or that, what was the word she used, was, I don't want to, it was, like, something other than intense, but it was, like, yeah, passionate. She's like, I didn't realize it was that passionate. And I was like, touche. I didn't realize that we hadn't shown that so outwardly publicly previously in these community spaces. It was like, we've probably been that passionate, like, in the tent in our private space, but not, like, out here. So that was something she let me know. Like, I didn't realize it was, like, that far. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, well, how are you feeling about that? And we checked in. She was like, you know, I checked in with her. Felt good. Understood where everything was coming from. I'm checking in with you to make sure, like, just to see where you were coming from. And I was like, I did not realize, and the reason was, like, there was some clear reasons where I was like, I thought you literally saw me the last time we were interacting that passionately, and I literally, like, we were together, I literally got up, we hadn't started being romantic yet or anything, but we were, like, literally by each other, and I was like, all right, I'm about to go sleep over there, and I was like, I thought you put two and two together. She was like, I was kind of oblivious. So she was like, and I didn't ask any questions, so I was like, not saying it's all on you, I'm just letting you know I didn't know. And I'm like, cool, let's talk about it. And she had already, like, made the gesture of, like, I want to talk to you about this. And I was, like, open to it. And that was, like, where I was, like, oh, this is the power of the transparency. Because there are going to be times where you're going to step on each other's toes a little bit. There are going to be times where somebody's feelings are going to get hurt. And that's not the only time somebody's feelings have been hurt. But I think that being one of the first times, it set the precedent for how we handle it. I can go to them when I don't feel good about something. They can come to me when they don't feel good about something. Yeah. And they both have when they haven't felt good about stuff. And I'm not alone in the support for them of that. Like, when something's not feeling great, it's not just me trying to fix everything, because that wouldn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. How fascinating. Well, and the amount of communication, it truly is that. Like, you have to be willing to lean into all of the communication. And I think it's very easy to shy away from things that make us uncomfortable. like let's just feel like, you know, like, we're inside your body, you can feel that there's things to be sorted. And if you lean into the space of trying to figure shit out, where you're not sure what the answer is going to be, but you need to say something, and it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to lean into those spaces, but it is, regardless of how many people you have in your relationships that are working together, it kind of doesn't really matter. Like, you can be monogamous or polyamorous, and all of it is requiring communication and saying things that are uncomfortable, and being brave enough. It's like really being brave and curious in those conversations to say, like, I don't know. There's things that I do not know, but how can I be brave enough to lean into this and give enough space for both me and this other person to say, like, okay, we can wiggle here and figure it out.
I'd say the biggest thing about this, different from this experience, from my previous experiences in polyamory or poly relationships or multi-partnership, in dealing with multiple relationships in the past, there wasn't a true vision of why for me. and what I wanted it to end up looking like. And now the vision for why and what I want it to look like has become so clear, because I'm like, the why is simply because, like, even with me having a child, like, I grew up with one parent, like I say one and a half parents, because I had one parent who was very present and did everything she could, even though she physically, because she did everything she could, wasn't able to be here a lot of the time she was working. And then I have another parent who just showed up when he felt like it, kind of. And because he showed up when he felt like it, he could take credit for stuff he wanted to take credit for, because he chose when he showed up. And then he wasn't there for the things that I need him for, because he chose when he showed up. So it was always important to me to have multiple present parents. So the fact that my child will have three is really important.
Wow.
Like it's breaking a generational curse in my book. It's also just, I never really had the sense of a nuclear family that went beyond my mom. And I could argue for like my cousin and my aunt. And my aunt has passed, and my cousin has her own family that she has expanded the nucleus of. And with all that, it's like, I grew up in an era between my cousin figuring out growing up and building her family, and my aunt being too old to, she was present, but it was like, yeah, she's here, but you know, she was 50 something when I got here, pretty much. And it was one of those situations where I'm like, I never had that immediate day-to-day nucleus family where I'm like, I come home, somebody's in the house. I came home to an empty house for, you know, let's call it 8 years of my life up until I left for college. And so from the ages of 9 to 17, to come home to an empty house, the thing I've yearned for is to come home and people be here. For my house to be warm, because I'm not the only one occupying it. For the parental figures to not just get home at 7, 8 o'clock at night, try to throw dinner together and spend as much time as they can with you before it's time for bed. Like, I wanted it to feel like a family.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that vision before. Before I was just like, hey, my dad always had multiple women, I think I'm a better man than him, let me try it. Or it was, hey, they like me, they're with this, let me try it. And now it's like, yo, I'm building a family. Are you with that? Here's why. Are you with that? Are you sure?
Yeah.
It's not always going to be comfortable. We're going to go through mud. It's going to be beautiful days. It's going to be storms. It's going to be times it's going to feel like we are living on a vacation. Are you with that?
Yeah.
It's also a yoga and spiritually based family. Like, we are about wellness, yoga, and like advancing ourselves. Like, are you with that? And it's kind of like, so that vision has made it so that I have reasons behind the stuff that I want now. I have reasons behind having more than one partner. And that's given me structure to how to like live with it. Because I was about to say manage, but I don't really manage my partners. I don't have to. I've chosen people that I don't have to manage. That was the whole
point. Yeah, yeah. We're not here. Like, that's not what we're interested in.
Yeah, but men get into that thing where we're like, where they like, they try to pick a woman that they can manage. And I'm like, that's not what we're here to do.
Yeah.
I'm like, my brother says it best. He's like, yo, women are the ocean. Just learn how to swim, fam. And I'm like, that's what my partners have taught me. I'm like, oh, I want to be a really, really good swimmer. So it's okay if my ocean is like double deep. It's okay.
Yeah. Oof.
Okay. I'm a deep sea diver.
Okay. So
I've been diving deep for my whole life.
I fucking love this so much. Do all of you live in the same house then? Same place?
Not yet. Okay. Not yet. One of my partners is long distance, so she's in Ohio.
Okay.
And the other one is here in Baltimore. We are actually about to move in together here in the very near future.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, so exciting. And, you know, I think such an underlying piece of this is really, you know, like could you have imagined? Like, first of all, could you have even imagined this? Like, move yourself back to, like, 2019.
No.
Where you are now and like trying to be open relationship then with that person and like that not working and you're like, what the hell?
Honey, we talked about this. In 2019, I was formulating my thoughts around how I was going to spend the rest of my life as a hoe. Like, for real. I was like, yo, I was like, I could just be making content on OnlyFans and living my best life, get like two sugar mamas that fly me out and pay my bills all the time for the rest of my life, and just be a professional, very deeply seated spiritual wellness hoe.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, plenty of women are doing it. I'm like, there needs to be some masculine energy in this space. I'm like, I just feel called to occupy. I was like so ready. And now here I am like, oh, damn, I guess I am going to actually show people how to build community and family.
Yeah.
Because that's what my life is. Like, my life is basically, this is what I teach from.
Yeah.
So I don't really have much of an option other than being like, okay, so if my life is giving me like actual family right now, I guess it's time for me to teach based on.
Yeah. So one of the things that I really like that has been an underlying piece, I think, of all of the stories so far is like, yeah, we're going to acknowledge and like appreciate where we've come from and who we grew up with and the relationships and your vision of love and what that means right now. But it is you. And I think love after divorce, when I think about that, I have thought so much about how I think about myself and how my responsibility to myself to like be like, okay, who's Bonnie? Like, can I look at myself in the mirror and be like, okay, here you are, and what are you doing? And you know, you said briefly, like the conversation with somebody you were talking about, you're like, you know, maybe you should come to yoga. Maybe you should come and try to develop like, what is it inside of you? And I think that's my hope in having these conversations or making these more like normal. Like, let's just talk about this. Like, let's talk about the transformation of self and the exploration and the expansion of what love is for all of our lives. But like, the only constant in all of it is the person in the mirror. like that's the biggest pivot point. That's the biggest relationship that we're truly all going to have.
I think divorce actually gave me a lot of the tools that I needed to prepare for fatherhood. In divorce, you lose something that it's pretty apparent what you're losing, on one hand, like the actual relationship with the person, but you also lose something that you don't realize you're going to lose until the divorce is like finalized, or at least you're fully separated, living separately, and you don't talk to them on a regular daily basis anymore, or whatever the rhythm shift is, right? And the thing you lose is the relationship with whoever you were while you were married. And it's because you can't be that person anymore. Like, they don't exist anymore. They died. Like, when the divorce gets finalized, y'all move out and say the final things, like, that person that you were in that marriage literally dies. You create a character. And even if the character is as close to who you want to really be and who you are as possible, that character has adjustments and settings based on that marriage. Guaranteed. You do it in every relationship, but in marriages, you do it, like, to the 10th degree. The thing that I lost in divorce, being that relationship with who I was apparent because I had gone through some of the most powerful transformations in my life in that marriage. I had gone through yoga teacher training, two of them, 500 hours worth of training. I'd gone to my first three yoga retreats. I had done a lot of stuff that I became a full-on, like, full-time yoga teacher. I had started running my business full-time pretty much. Like, I had been running my business, but I really, like, ramped it up to care for her during our marriage. So it was a lot of stuff that happened based on that. And the person who created those things died. Right? That was something to deal with when I got back to the East Coast and had to, like, gear up for, okay, so who's Marcus now? Because he's not married anymore. He's not the married yoga teacher who lives and moved to Portland. He's literally not. He is in Baltimore. He's not married. He's still a yoga instructor, but he doesn't teach anywhere right now. Like, who is he? For real. And I had to rebuild that, right? Rebuilding it from there, though, gave me such a solid understanding of who I am as a force in the community, as a force in my family, as a force for myself and my own life. That, like, now, as I move into fatherhood and I feel the things, like, wanting to slip away slightly about like, oh, sleeping a little bit, that morning practice isn't that important. I'm like, no. That morning practice is what kept you from crying yourself to sleep every day when you thought you forgot who you were. So get your ass up, get on that yoga mat, get to it, because you know that the person who needs to show up is the full Marcus. You don't want your child to get some half-assed version of you like you got from your parents. They were too tired. They were too busy. They were too this. They were too that. They didn't have the practice to bring them present to show up for you. Mm. You do. What's your excuse going to be? Mm. And I'm like, if I wouldn't have gone through divorce, I wouldn't have gone through the process of having to find myself and create such a solid relationship with the parts of you you lose when you enter new relationships with things. Like a new relationship with anything, you lose parts of you. When I entered my relationship with yoga, I lost parts of who Marcus was before 25 that don't exist anymore. Like they're literally gone. Like there's shit that I used to do that I literally, it wouldn't compute in my brain and body anymore. And I'm like, some of the stuff that you lose along the way for some transitions in life is not stuff we want to lose. Some of it's great. Like my transition to yoga, lost a bunch of shit that I was happy to lose. Some of it I picked back up. I put away eating salmon for like 2 years, not realizing my body craves it on a regular basis. Like it doesn't matter what form, fashion, it's like my body's literally screaming at me when I don't do it. And it's like, so some stuff I pick back up, right? And some stuff has been gone and placed away forever. Mm. And that's what I learned. I was like, yo, thankfully, as I prepare to become a dad, I know that some stuff I can't put down. Not if I want to be the best, most present dad I can be. And then there's other stuff that I'm like, damn, I'm going to have to put that down. I really like and enjoy that, though. But I got to put it down. Because there's other stuff that I'm not willing to put down.
Yeah.
And it lets me make the decision from a place of awareness around myself where I'm like, you know, I know this part's for fun. And I know this part is like literally for my mental health and my sanity. So I'm like, there might be a little less of this fun stuff. We're going to keep this mental health. We're going to keep this sanity. We're going to keep the fitness. We're going to keep the wellness. We're going to keep the taking care of ourselves. We're going to keep the meditation. We're going to keep the time for breath work. We're going to keep the time in the morning to yourself. We're going to keep all of these things. And it's like, it's funny because I've been waking. I thought I woke up early before Bonnie. Shit. I am waking up early as hell some of these days, but I'm excited to do it because like right when I'm like, damn, I'm also like, nobody else is up right now. You know that if you get up right now, the time you'll have right now is
yours. Yeah.
Guaranteed. And it's like, and you don't know how long this part's going to last. You don't know if he's going to sleep through the night. You don't know how this kid's going to sleep. You don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm like, take advantage of this time and space you have now so that you truly are prepared. That's kind of what I've been telling myself. Take advantage of the time and space now so I can be truly and legitimately prepared.
Yes. This has me excited for anybody who's listening to this who is maybe in that place of divorce being very fresh. And where it's the breaking apart of like who you were, what you were doing, why you were doing it. And there's not a lot of celebration oftentimes when people I was at Home Depot. I was picking up some paint.
There is in my family.
A celebration.
Oh yeah. We celebrate when people get divorced over here.
Yeah. But like, I think, sure, there could be like pockets of people. And I know when I was getting divorced, I had somebody who was like, I'm stoked for you. And I'm like, awesome, cool. But I think at large, like, I want to be like this voice of saying like, cool, I'm stoked for you. There's going to be hard things. There's going to be shit that you're going to be like, wow, I really didn't do that well. And as you get in other relationships, you're like, I was kind of shitty there. That was kind of shitty to me there. Or there's going to be so much learning. But even now, I was at Home Depot picking up some paint, and like the dude, and he was an older dude, and he asked me if I was married, and I told him I was divorced. Anyway, it was like this whole story, and he was like, "Oh, I'm sorry," and I'm like, "Why is it sorry?" Like, so that's very much not the message I want to have be here, but just that, like, this celebration of expansion for yourself and where you're like, if I wasn't in that space. And I think of for me and where yoga landed in my life too, of it provides enough structure to be like, to look inside and to be like, who am I? Like, what am I doing? And to start helping you find that in a way, and having enough, like the right people and teachers and community around you to do that. I definitely feel that for my own life. And it was the right timing. And my divorce was also my expansion into freedom of figuring out who I was and what I want. And I am excited for people who are in that space and who might just be like dipping their toes in and like making these decisions. And it's going to be hard, but it like we can't, it's going to be so good that you can't even imagine it. Like there's so much goodness ahead of where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There is. So for anybody listening, no, this is probably the roughest part. Like the part right after when you realize like, oh, I lost these parts of myself, or oh, I'm missing that part of myself. Like that's the difficult part, is just the recognition of like, oh, I am missing that and I do want it back. And then you just gotta kind of make a decision. Once the decision's made, the path kind of lays itself out. It walks you right back to meet yourself wherever it is you want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Thank you so much for sharing today. I have loved this.
Thanks for having me again, Bonnie.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, everybody, we'll put it in the show notes of spaces you can go connect with Marcus if you're in Baltimore, especially if you're in person. And if you want to connect with them online, there's spaces for that as well. I love you tons, and continues to be a gift. I mean, this time next year, you can wear your butt plug this time. Maybe you'll have a baby with you.
Wow. You bring the butt plug, I'll bring the baby.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much. Okay, everybody. Thank you for tuning in and listening. Thank you for leaning into your own definitions of what love is and finding it in yourself, and giving yourself permission to expand what that means in all the different stages of your life. You're more than one thing. Keep it sexy.